Well, as you know, we try our best here on Community Radio Yaw to keep you up to date with events both local and national. And it's a great pleasure now to welcome the spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage representing Fine Gael, Senator John Cummins. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Tommy, and good evening to your listeners.
It's been a good day here in Cork, and I hope a good day in County Waterford.
Absolutely, yeah. The weather has been shining. Everybody has been out and about. I think it brings out the best in people.
It does indeed, and we all enjoy it. John, we'll start with a few national events. We've had kind of pluses and minuses, ups and downs about the vaccine and the AstraZeneca during the week. Maybe you tell ourselves what's the latest and greatest now in terms of vaccines supply and the rollout?
Yeah, look, it's obviously been a difficult week with the issues that have arisen with regards to restricting the AstraZeneca to the over 60s population, and we've also had the issues with Johnson & Johnson in terms of the pause of their rollout. That's not as serious at the moment because they were only to deliver 40,000 vaccines this month in April, and it was to ramp up then in May and June. So, but the issues that are there obviously have to be, it's challenging for the HSE in terms of the rollout team in order to adjust the programme to be able to suit vaccines to the various different cohorts. But we did have positive news with regards to the opening of the online portal yesterday. 69-year-olds were able to register yesterday. There was 26,000 people registered as of yesterday evening, and 68-year-olds were invited to register on the portal today. So I haven't seen the figures yet for today. But obviously those appointments will be scheduled. And as part of that process, people have to input their air code number, and they'll be given an appointment at their closest vaccination centre.
John, some people now might be a bit wary about the old internet and using their phone or their laptop. There is actually a phone number as well there, isn't there, from the HSE that people can use if they're a little bit...
Don't have it to hand here now, Tommy, but yes.
There is, yeah. So listeners, don't be too worried if you're not big into the internet there. There's a helpline there to help you out, and we'll have it here in the weekend on CRY.
I know that I've been helping people with regards to the online stuff,
yeah,
as well. So,
and John, there was good news as well in that we're getting, is it an extra 500,000 new viruses from vaccines rather from Pfizer?
Yeah, there was positive call between government and the European Commission yesterday in relation to 545,000 additional Pfizer doses. So that they're going to be delivered this quarter. I don't have the exact breakdown of April, May or June as of yet, but obviously that's really positive.
It's great news.
The Pfizer supply has held strong. We have obviously had issues with AstraZeneca from the outset in terms of supply, but Pfizer has been very strong in terms of their supply lines, and it's obviously really positive that they're going to deliver 545,000 additional ones this quarter.
John, can I just run something by you here on the COVID tracker? I mentioned it to the listeners earlier on. If you look up the cases for any day, I'm just picking the 14th of April, the majority of counties, including our own here, your good selves in Waterford and Cork, have very low numbers. For instance, on the 14th of April, the tracker says Carlow, the entire county, had 2 cases. Cavan had 5, Clare had 5, Kerry had 4, Waterford had 5, Cork had 12, some counties had none, Roscommon and Sligo. And the big bad bowl boys, Dublin, are getting away with it. 106 in Dublin and Kildare 30. My point is, why should the rural counties, by and large, who are behaving themselves very well, have very, very small number of cases, still be kind of locked down when the big culprits are Dublin and the satellite counties?
Yeah, look, it's obviously a difficult one, Tommy. we have had local restrictions previously.
Yeah.
In the Midlands last year. Personally, I'd be supportive of that, but you have to also consider that if you open up in one area, do you create an influx of visitors from areas with higher incidence rates? Obviously, I know we're not supposed to be going outside of our county at the moment, but we have to look at the reality that people will travel if they can get a service in a bordering county, and it could be a case that a bordering county has a very high incidence rate, like Offaly is very high at the moment, and you have to be very careful of that. But isn't it great that we're in a position to be having these discussions? You know,
yeah, I'd agree.
Since we had the highest rate in Europe, we had 7,000 cases, and we had very serious strain on our ICU capacity. So, look, we're slowly unwinding the restrictions. I think it is slow and steady wins the race, to be honest with you. It's really positive that we've had all kids back in school this week. It is really positive that we have construction resumed Monday. And obviously now we can all travel within our counties as well, which, you know, people that have been in urban centres have been able to get to the coastline, which has been hugely welcome. I know for people in Waterford City to be able to get out to the coastline and to be able to travel down to places like Ardmore. So we are getting there, but it is difficult. And, you know, I suppose there is no one size fits all. This is a once in a, you know, life pandemic, and, you know, there is no rule book for this. And so, look, we saw what happened before Christmas, so we have to...
We don't want to repeat it, that, John, sure we don't.
Absolutely not.
No. Now, John, among your brief, you are the spokesperson for Fine Gael on housing. And I suppose it was good to see some form of construction reopening this week. And would you be hopeful that there will be, you know, more construction workers back at work very soon? And also, you're very much involved with a housing bill. Maybe you'd like to tell our listeners a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, look, obviously it's been very difficult over the last number of months for people involved in the construction sector. You know, there were projections that there was going to be 28,000 homes delivered this year. That was prior to the lockdown last year. They were revised to 24,000 before we had the lockdown at the start of this year, and the Construction Industry Federation estimates that it could be as low as 16,000 as a result of the closure of the sector. But we did get 15,000 workers back this week.
Great news, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely great news. That's 15,000 less people on a pandemic unemployment payment. And it's obviously houses being provided, which are much needed for individuals and families. And tied into that, which you mentioned there, is the Affordable Housing Bill, which we've been working on as a joint Oireachtas committee, which it will be signed off in the next couple of weeks and will then come into the Dáil or the Seanad. And what we're looking at there is introducing an extension of the Part 5, which that provides 10% social housing in private estates at the moment. We're looking to extend that to an additional 10% for affordable purchase units. We're going to introduce a shared equity scheme, which will allow the state to take an equity stake in a private home for an individual if there is a gap between what they can afford to get or get from a pillar bank. And we're also looking at introducing cost rentals for the very first time for a cohort of people that are above the social housing threshold, but yet are stuck in really high rents, particularly in the urban centres like Waterford and Cork. And we're all, the local authorities are going to get back into the business of providing affordable purchase homes also. So there's four elements to that bill, but obviously all four of them are to do with providing affordability in the housing market. So it's hugely welcome.
Indeed, I saw there on the telly, John, that the cost of houses, the price of houses has gone up. So I assume if this bill gets through, you know, that will help keep the prices stable anyway, maybe drive them down a bit. But there's a fierce shortage at the moment, isn't there, in Ireland, of quality houses for people. And it's not that people lack money. They have the money, but the houses simply aren't here in Youghal, or I'm sure Waterford City or Cork City either, you know.
Yeah, look, supply is the issue.
Yeah.
And obviously with the construction closure over the last number of months, it's not going to help the situation this year. But by putting in the measures by government to facilitate new construction, because there's a large number of planning applications that are there that have permission, but we haven't seen commencements on site. And, you know, builders do have to see the market, and by providing the likes of these schemes, they will see the market, they will increase supply. That will obviously feed into reducing prices, particularly in the second-hand market, as we see more new houses coming on stream. So, look, if it was easy to solve, it would be done.
Yes.
And, you know, people that think that you can just click your fingers and you'll solve the housing crisis, you know, they're not being honest with people. You know, it takes time to get planning permission. It takes time to build a house. But, you know, we're making great strides to be able to tackle that. You know, I'm 33 years of age myself. I do rent. My age cohort, it is very important. And we have seen a drop in home ownership over the last couple of decades. And we certainly need to reverse that trend.
Indeed. And, John, there was good news here in Youghal and in Ardmore, if you'd like to share it with the listeners.
Yes, absolutely. There was positive news that we're going to have state-of-the-art facilities to support water-based activities in both Ardmore and Youghal. So they're part of 22 locations across the country. It's a €19 million investment. And basically, it's going to provide hot showers, toilets for civilians, lock-up areas for your belongings, wash-down areas for your equipment. You know, it's going to be a huge addition to the tourist offer in all of those locations. And they'll also be wheelchair accessible, and they'll be near zero energy rating on all of the buildings. So it's a huge investment by the state. But, you know, our coastline and our beaches and our water-based activities are very, very important. And it's only right and proper that the state invests in proper facilities.
And, John, have you any idea of the timeline involved? Is it this year, the next few months, or when, do you think?
Obviously, we'll have to, you know, get the designs and the construction in place. But it's expected that all 22 of them will be in place for summer 22.
Excellent. Great news for people all around the country, but particular Youghal and Ardmore. That's great. Now, John, just to return basically to the vaccine and all of that, there's been much talk and discussion about this 15-minute antigen test. Where do you stand on that, John?
Yeah, I think we've probably been a little bit slow in adopting the antigen testing. I know, you know, there's been a lot of reservations expressed that you have false negatives. You know, the false positives are not really an issue because you'll have a PCR test and you'll confirm a case or not. But, you know, if you create the perception that somebody is all right and they continue going about their usual routine and they're actually still carrying the virus, that can be a problem. But the fact that they're cheap, the fact that they're readily available, you can get an answer from them very quickly. You know, they can be used in settings. I see them in education settings. I know Minister Harris is looking at the rollout of them in particular across colleges to allow for full resumption in September for students to get back to college. But there's plenty of other settings. We talked about construction. I know there's a lot of private sites that are using antigen testing. And I suppose it's part of the suite of measures that we use in order to tackle the virus.
Very good. Now, we've heard kind of a lot of reports about the quarantining in the hotels. And I think one good thing, if I could just mention it there, which I think makes sense, people coming into the country, I think, they should quarantine if they're coming from these special countries where the cases are high. But anybody who has gone to the bother of getting the vaccine in their own country, I mean, I can't see why they have to quarantine. And I think, am I right, John, that the Minister Harris or Stephen Donnelly is going to allow these people to quarantine in their own homes from next week, is it?
Yeah, the regulations are being drawn up at the moment. It was signed off by Cabinet yesterday. That is a really positive development, because I suppose it shows us that there's light at the end of the tunnel for people that have been vaccinated. You know, we have 20% of the population that have now received the first dose of the vaccine. And obviously that's going to ramp up over the next 3 months. But, you know, for those people to know that potentially they'll be able to travel and not have to restrict on the way back, you know, is a welcome development. And I had a call from a constituent who has actually been working in Israel over the last number of months and has received his two Pfizer doses over there. And I know they were removed from the Category 2 countries last week, but they were on it originally. And his concern was that, you know, do I have to do 2 weeks? Quarantine when I've been fully vaccinated for the last 3 weeks. So, you know, I think that's a common sense measure.
And they have enough space, have they now? Because, I mean, John, just looking at it from afar, I would have thought simple planning was, if the more countries you include in the list, the more hotel beds you would need, particularly the bigger countries like France and America and Canada. They have a lot of people coming to Ireland traditionally. So obviously, if you're going to quarantine people from those countries, there's going to be a lot of people and a lot of beds required. You know, was there a muck-up in the planning there, do you think, or what's the story at all?
Well, look, I suppose opposition would present this as a simple thing. You know, it's not, and it's not a silver bullet either. You know, I would have had reservations about the introduction of the system, because, you know, there will always be cases. And let's not forget, you know, the state has said that we're only looking at essential travel. Non-essential travel should not be happening. There's the €2,500 fine with regards to that. But, you know, we have sports teams and athletes that are representing Ireland. You know, you have people that are engaged with surrogacy services abroad. You have people that are getting specialised cancer treatment. You know, I had a pregnant lady that was in contact with the constituency office a couple of weeks ago that was moving back from Australia because she touched down in Dubai and was in the airport there for a couple of hours. She had to mandatory quarantine for a couple of weeks. So, you know, this is no joke. When you introduce a system like this, it is strict, it is stringent. But, you know, there is a hole in the system, and that is Northern Ireland. And, you know, that can't be ignored. It is a simple fact that somebody can get a flight into Northern Ireland and come over
the border,
Always been a flaw in the argument in relation to mandatory hotel quarantine.
Listeners got in touch, John. What are they, I assume the government, what are the government doing to reduce the cost of building or assist landlords?
Well, obviously, reducing
the cost of building and or assist landlords.
Well, I'm not sure what they mean by assisting landlords. Obviously, there's the housing assistance payment that's there with regards to social housing tenants that are in private rented accommodation. Obviously, in reducing the cost of housing, that's a difficult one. That's the $1 million question, really. But the provision of schemes like the shared equity scheme, which is going to help people to get a foot on the ladder, And also the introduction of, you know, the local authority led schemes where they will be building affordable housing on state owned land, which will, you know, won't have land costs involved in it, won't have development contributions attaching to them. That will lower the cost in terms of the affordable schemes. And as well as that, the Part 5 that I mentioned, the 10% there would be based on the residual land value, so not the inflated cost for those 10% of houses that would be provided in the scheme. So, you know, there's a number of measures there. That affordable housing bill is going to be through the Oireachtas by the summer, and I look forward to the provision of affordable homes over the coming years. But, you know, it's not a simple one to resolve. As I said, if it was, it would be done long ago.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Thank you, listener. And John, we're rapidly running out of time, but I know that you've been very busy as well with another bill that you'd like to tell our listeners a little bit about, the electoral reform bill. Would you tell us a little bit about that and what it means?
Yeah, the electoral reform bill is probably going to be the biggest piece of legislation that has come through the Oireachtas in some time. It's looking at reforming our electoral database, the electoral register. It's going to allow for pre-enrollment of 16 and 17-year-olds.
Is that new, John? No, excusing my... 16 and 17-year-olds are not allowed to vote at the moment, is that my...
Vote, so, but they would be allowed to pre-enroll so that if there was an election called... date, and they've turned 18 in that time, would automatically be on the register.
Very good.
And it's also looking at linking PPS numbers to someone's on the electoral system, which will allow you to change your address. So if I moved from Cork to Waterford, I would be able to change my address on the...
Very practical.
Online. And obviously, you know, we've had issues over many, many years where people who have died have got notices for jury duty.
Oh, yeah, that was...
For that.
Yeah,
for any... They're still on the electoral register and what's used for jury service. So obviously, if you've linked a PPS number to it, a PPS number dies when somebody dies. So that would remove that, and it would remove the anguish for a lot of families to be receiving posts like that as well. There's lots of other areas across electoral advertising and all of that that are going to be tackled as well.
John, will there be a change in the electoral boundaries because of increases in population, do you think, looking forward? Or will they more or less remain as they are, let's say, in East Cork and Waterford, where you are?
No, that's likely. As part of the electoral reform bill, there'll be an electoral commission established also. At the moment, we have, you know, an electoral commission that's established every time that there's an election or a referendum commission. What's going to be put in place is a permanent commission.
Yeah.
They'll be taking the CSO data. The census was postponed this year. It's going to take place next year. And within 6 months of the preliminary data coming out from the CSO, they'll have to revise the electoral boundaries as a result of that. And, you know, where there has been increases in population, it's likely that there could be more TDs. It could be that certain areas have to be taken out of other constituencies to balance up the numbers. But there should be no more than 30,000 population for each TD. So in Waterford, if you kept the exact same boundaries, it would be expected that there could be an additional TD in Waterford. But then again, you could look possibly some of the area of Waterford was in South Tipperary previously. If that was taken back out, would you be back below the 120? 20,000.
Yeah.
So they're all the things that the Electoral Commission will be looking at. But it is positive that we're going to have a permanent Electoral Commission that will be able to look at all of those issues across 12 months of the calendar year, as opposed to just looking at it any time that there's an election. And they can also engage with the public in terms of educating and engaging with the public all of the time. So I think there's a lot of positive provisions in the bill.
John, it's been a pleasure having you as our special guest. Listeners, in case you joined us late, you've been listening to Senator John Cummins, who is the spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage, representing the Fine Gael party, talking to us from the Waterford constituency. John, it's been a pleasure. Any last word for the good people in East Cork and West Waterford listening to you this evening?
Oh no, just to say, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to engaging with you again in the future.
Thank you, John.
And anybody that needs assistance with any issues, they can always contact the constituency office. We're always more than happy to help out anyone with any queries that they have.
And John, I suppose just to educate us further, where is your constituency office, or how may people email you, or have you got an email or yes, you'd like to give out?
john.cummins@aroctus.ie, and you'll find the website. It's johncumminswaterford.ie. So you can make contact with us. Obviously, the constituency as office is closed with COVID, but we're working remotely, Lauren in the office and myself, so we're more than happy to assist at any stage.
And John, can I ask you the very, very unfair question? Do you think that we'd be back to enjoying ourselves, for want of a better term, by the late summer?
Oh, I certainly hope so. And I look forward, please God, to be able to get outside the county and get into Cork on a holiday.
John, we'll give you a nice cup of tea if you come as far as Yall, and we have you in person here, and we'll have some nice apple tart and a cup of tea for you some Friday evening.
Thanks very much. I look forward to it.
And it's been a pleasure talking to you, John, and the very best of luck with your own political career. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us here on Community Radio Yall. It's been a pleasure, John.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed.